KGNU Boulder, Denver, 88.5 FM, 1390 AM. Up in Nederland, 93.7 FM, and we're live online everywhere at kgnu.org. And of course, 7 o'clock on a Monday evening means it's time for the Opera Box. And good evening. Welcome to KGNU's Opera Box. My name's Ron Nadell. I'm your host, and tonight my playlist features the magic in Wagner's operas. Not just the magic of the music, but the magic in the stories, such as the talking bird in Siegfried. And scenes from Tristan and Isolde and Wagner's four-part opera cycle, The Nibelung's Ring. Join me for tonight's operatic magic. Well, Siegfried just killed the dragon Fafnir, and as he pulled the sword out of the dragon, blood spurts on his hands. Instinctively, he brings his hand to his mouth, and tasting the dragon's blood, is suddenly able to understand the speech of the animals, and a forest bird tells him to go into the dragon's cave and take the dragon's ring and magic helmet. That's from Act Two of Siegfried, the third opera in Wagner's four-part series, The Nibelung's Ring. And we heard Wolfgang Wingassen as Siegfried and a young Joan Sutherland as the forest bird. Georg Scholte conducted the Vienna Philharmonic. Well, it's just coming up now on a half minute after, 3.5 minutes after 7 o'clock, and you're listening to the Opera Box on KGNU. I'm your host, Ron Nadell, with a program of magic moments from Wagner's opera. Wagner used magic potions and powers in several of his operas, usually as symbols of human nature or hidden motivations, as we're going to see with this next example from Tristan und Isolde. Tristan is a warrior in the army of ancient England, and he led them to defeat the Irish. In the whole war, he killed the rebellious Irish warrior Morold. And in Act One of the opera, he's bringing Morold's lover, Isolde, back to England to become King Mark's bride. Isolde is known for her knowledge of potions, and she saved Tristan, who'd been wounded in battle, not knowing who he was. He fell in love with her, but now she knows that he's killed her lover, and she's filled with desire for revenge. She plans to poison Tristan and herself. Tristan has avoided Isolde on the boat journey back to England so that his feelings won't interfere with his duty. Now, in this scene, She scornfully goads him into making a toast to get him to drink the potion. You can hear her hatred, but he knows she'll poison him. He no longer cares to live. Well, she accidentally gives him a love potion, and their strong hatred turns into intense passion just as their boat arrives in England to the cheers of the sailors. It's as if Wagner is saying love and hatred are two sides of the same coin. From Act One of Tristan und Isolde. Tristan und Isolde fall insanely in love thanks to a magic potion, an awkward moment where two people who hate each other now love each other intensely amid all of the excitement and confusion as the boat arrives in England from Act One of Wagner's Tristan und Isolde. And we heard Birgit Nilsson, the soprano, as Isolde. Wolfgang Wingassen was Tristan, and you could also hear the mezzo-soprano Christa Ludwig as Brangana. That's Isolde's handmaiden. Carl Böhm conducted the Bayreuth Festival Orchestra. And we're looking at about 16 minutes after 7 o'clock. You're listening to The Opera Box on KGNU. I'm your host, Ron Nadel, with a playlist that surveys Wagner's use of magic in his operas. I think Wagner's greatest symbolic use of magical elements occurs throughout his four-opera epic, The Nibelung's Ring, beginning with the very first part, the opera known as The Rheingold. The evil dwarf Alberich forged an all-powerful ring from magic gold in the Rhine River. He plans world domination, but the gods are bent on stopping him. In scene three, Wotan, the king of the gods, and Loga, the god of fire, descend to Alberich's underworld home. They use cunning and deceit, which are themselves kind of magic. They try to get the ring from Alberich. How would Alberich protect himself from enemies, they ask. Well, he says he has a magic chainmail helmet, a Tarn helm that lets him change into any shape, and he turns into a large serpent to prove it, and they feign fear. But what if he wanted to hide, they ask. Well, he says he can become as small as a toad. And as he says this, he changes into a toad before their eyes. Well, the gods instantly seize him, tie him up, and remove the Tarn helm, the magic helmet. This is from Rheingold by Wagner.
I'm welcher Gestalt soll ich ja vor dich stehen?
In welcher du bist? Nur mach vor Staunen mich stumm.
The gods use cunning and deceit to quickly overcome Alberich's magic. From Rheingold, the first opera of Wagner's four-part series, The Nibelung's Ring. 25 and a half minutes after 7, you're listening to The Opera Box on KGNU. I'm your host, Ron Nadell, with a playlist that surveys the use of magic in Wagner's operas. And be sure to stay with me. I'm going to be your host from 8 to 10 this evening on a Classic Monday with a playlist of classical music storms. That's at 8 o'clock. Well, another use of magic occurs in opera number 2, The Valkyrie. Wotan's long-range plan to recover the ring was subverted by his daughter, Brunhilde, a Valkyrie warrior. In the final scene of this opera, he informs her that her punishment is to be locked in a magic sleep. Her life will be subject to fate. She must follow any man who finds her and wakes her up. Well, she convinces Photon to place a magic fire around her so that only a hero would wake her. After placing her in a magic sleep, he summons the god of fire with his mighty spear, and then declaring, "Whomever fears my spear shall never pass through the fire." That hero will be Siegfried in the next opera. And the magic fire is symbolic. It's symbolic of artificial societal beliefs. And to Wagner, a new breed of hero would not be fooled or fearful of those. From The Valkyrie. A magic fire surrounds the sleeping Brunhilde, so only a brave hero would risk waking her. Could you hear the fire and those flickering strings and woodwinds? That's from Act Three of The Valkyrie, which was the second opera in Wagner's operatic tetralogy, The Nibelung's Ring. We heard Hans Hotter as Wotan, and Georg Scholte conducted the Vienna Philharmonic in that world-famous classic recording of Wagner's Ring. Well, Siegfried is the hero who wakens and marries Brunhilde. He possesses the ring and the Tarnhelm, which he took from the dead dragon in opera number 3. In Götterdämmerung, The Twilight of the Gods, the fourth opera, Alberich's son, Hagen, has his own plans to get the ring away from Siegfried. Now, in Act 1 of The Twilight of the Gods, Siegfried has given his ring to his wife Brunhilde as a sign of his love. And now, on a journey up the Rhine River, he meets the Gibichung clan. They're led by their king Gunther, who is half-brother to Hagen, Alberich's son. Gunther is unmarried and is looking for a wife worthy of being his queen. And his sister Gutruna is also unmarried. Well, Hagen tells Gunther about the valiant Brunhilde. She would be worthy, but she is surrounded by fire. Gunther says he cannot pass through the fire. But Hagen says he knows someone who can. And in this scene, Siegfried has arrived, and as a sign of friendship, Gutruna gives him a steer horn filled with mead. She doesn't know it, but Hagen has filled it with a powerful potion. It will make Siegfried forget Brunhilde and fall in love with Gutruna. Before he drinks the potion, Siegfried thinks about Brunhilde. But when he drinks it, he suddenly sees Gutruna. Gunther, he says, who is your sister? Well, Gunther mentions that he himself is looking for a bride, but the one he has in mind is unobtainable. When Gunther describes Brunhilde and the fire surrounding her, it's clear Siegfried has no memory of it. He pledges to help Gunther obtain the noble Brunhilde if he can marry Gutruna. Siegfried will wear the magic Tarnhelm and impersonate Gunther. The two men draw blood from their arms and mix it into a drink. Swearing blood brotherhood, they smash the steer horn and go on their dark mission. From The Twilight of the Gods.
Thank you. Thank you. krankt unser Blut.
Siegfried has been given a potion to make him forget his Brunhilde and fall in love with Gunther's sister Gertrune. The two men swear a blood brotherhood oath and head off to bring Brunhilde back as Gunther's wife. A diabolical plot twist in Götterdämmerung, The Twilight of the Gods, the fourth opera of Wagner's four-part The Nibelung's Ring. Well, later in the same act, Siegfried arrives at Brunhilde's mountain dwelling. The fire around her begins to recede, which makes Brunhilde believe that Siegfried has returned joyfully. He passes easily through the fire, but he's wearing the Tarnhelm, impersonating Gunther. She gives out a cry when she sees a stranger instead of Siegfried. Is this the stranger Wotan spoke of when he punished her? She tries to defend herself, but she's no match for him. He wrests the ring from her finger and prepares to take her back to Gunther. The conclusion to Act 1 of Götterdämmerung, The Twilight of the Gods, Part 4 of Wagner's four-part The Ring of the Nibelung.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Siegfried is under the power of a potion that makes him forget his wife Brunhilde and fall in love with Gunther's sister Gutruna. Unwittingly, he impersonates Gunther using the power of the Tarnhelm to secure his wife for Gunther. That's the end of Act One of Götterdämmerung, The Twilight of the Gods, the fourth part of Wagner's four-part opera series, The Nibelung's Ring. We heard Birgit Nilsson as Brunhilde and Wolfgang Wingassen as Siegfried. Georg Scholte conducted the Vienna Philharmonic. And in the clip before that, we heard Dietrich Fischer-Dieskau as Gunther, Claire Watson as Gutruna. Well, that's all the time we have this evening to explore some of the uses of magic in operas of Wagner. This is your host, Ron Nadell. I want to thank you for joining me this evening. Stay tuned for A Classic Monday. I'll be right back as your host with music, classical music of Storms. And join me next month, the first and second Mondays of the month, for my programs on The Opera Box and A Classic Monday.
My favorite president, why President Rushmore? His platform for the presidential run of 1872 was that the economy needed a plant sale exactly like the one KGNU will be holding Sunday, June 5th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. And what KGNU has is a jumpstart program for donations of plants and gardening tools. Just bring these items in to KGNU between May 20th through June 2nd. And you know, I'm almost positive that President Rushmore would have fully endorsed KGNU's plant sale. It's for the economy.
It's 30 seconds after 8 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU Boulder, Denver, 88.5 FM, 1390 AM. And we're live online everywhere at kgnu.org. Well, welcome once again to KGNU. This is A Classic Monday. I'm your host, Ron Nadell, still your host. You know, with all the storms we've had this past week or so, I thought it would be appropriate to survey storms in classical music, with music such as Vivaldi's Four Seasons. And music of Britten, Rossini, Wagner, Berlioz, Beethoven, Strauss, Griffet, Liszt, Sibelius, and others. Grab your rain gear. Join me for tonight's Classical Storms. Thank you. The third movement, Storm from Summer, the second of the Four Seasons by Antonio Vivaldi. And we heard Cho Lang Lin and the Sejong Soloists conducted by Anthony Newman. Well, we're just coming up on 4 minutes after 8 o'clock. You're listening to A Classic Monday on KGNU. Tonight, I've got a playlist of classical music storms that's going to blow your hair back. Some of our best storms come from opera, where the storms can be external symbols of internal conflict, or they can be foreshadowing dramatic turns in the plot. For example, in Britten's opera, Peter Grimes, the storm represents both the pressures in a fishing village that are about to explode, as well as the internal turmoil in the mind of the beleaguered fisherman, Peter Grimes.